just play with your first draft, just get it out of your head and onto the page. And I think so many of us try and get it right that first time, and you can't. I can never remember who referenced it first, but I use it all the time about shoveling sand. Just shovel sand into a sandpit. And then later, when you get to the editing stages, that's when you make your sandcastle. I think that's just a fabulous way of looking at it. Just get those words on the page and worry about the rest of it and how it all fits together later, as long as it's out of your brain.
Hello and welcome to the Creating Happy Writers podcast. It's episode 45. I'm your host, Steph Caswell, and I cannot wait to share today's episode with you because it is another guest episode. But before we get into that, let me just share a little bit more about who I am and what I do. If you are new to the podcast, welcome. If you're looking to write a business boosting book in your niche, then you're totally in the right place. If you've been here a while, thank you so much for continuing to listen. I'm a multi-published author and writing coach, and I really would love to take away the overwhelm and the confusion and the frustration that can come from trying to write a non-fiction book in your space. And I want to help you pursue your writing goals, whatever they may be. I'm also here for all the female writers out there who are trying to step into their space and showcase their expertise through writing a book. It has predominantly been a male-dominated industry when it comes to non-fiction and business books. So let's change that and let's move forward with some more amazing female writers. If you want to hear more from me, head on over to Substack. My free newsletter is there. It's called The Right Stuff, and it's all about writing and publishing. And if you're feeling so inclined, you can become a paid subscriber for the price of a London cup of coffee. Maybe elsewhere in the UK, maybe it's a couple of cups of coffee, but certainly in London, it's about the equivalent of a cup of coffee a month. You can find me at stephcaswell.substack.com. You can also buy a copy of my latest book, Dare to Write, on my website. And it's not been available on the website to buy for me directly for a little while, but I finally got myself into gear and it's now there for you to purchase. And I'm excited that it's there again. I missed having it on my website. It is also available on Amazon, but if you want to support me more as an independent author, check out stephcaswell.com/shop. Links to Substack and the shop are in the show notes. And if you want to work with me, you want to do some one-to-one stuff around your book, check out stephcaswell.com and I would love to support you. Enough of that. Let us dive into today's episode, which is with the rather incredible multi-book author, Shelley Wilson. Shelley is a self-confessed word nerd with a passion for storytelling, a love of exclamation marks, and a mission to inspire and entertain. She's an English multi-genre author of YA, fiction, and motivational self-help titles. She lives in a leafy suburb in the West Midlands with her three children and a spoilt black cat called Luna. Shelley is also a solo traveller, searching for stories and inspiration in her VW camper van called Snoopy, and she loves exploring castles, anything mythological or supernatural, and history. I had such a wonderful conversation with Shelley and was blown away by the number of books she has under her belt, an incredible 20. During our conversation, we chat about the incredible success of her debut non-fiction book, How I Changed My Life in a Year, which sold 20,000 copies in its first few outings, and why community and building your author platform is so important. We also discussed her hybrid model of publishing, both with her traditional publisher and also publishing books in a self-published format. She's also had some experience when one of the big five publishers got in touch. It just goes to show you never know who's watching or reading your stuff. We also chat about why, as writers, we can underestimate the emotional journey we'll go on when writing, whether it's fiction or non-fiction, and why self-compassion, vulnerability, and kindness are an essential part of our author toolkits, including when reading reviews of your book. And finally, we chat through habits that Shelley has to help her get her bum in the chair and continue writing. And these include heading out into her camper van and getting a change of scenery. And also the power of the deadline, particularly when you're self-publishing and you don't have a traditional editor tapping their fingers waiting for your manuscript. This was a marvellous conversation and I cannot wait for you to listen. So enjoy and I will see you on the other side.
Do you know, writing has been with me forever. It's just been something that I've done since I was very, very little. I followed Enid Blyton up a faraway tree many, many, many years ago, and I don't think I ever came back down again. So it is a passion. And I know in your book, you talk about how much the more you do it, the more you love it. And I get that. I fully understand that. So, but I was well into my 40s before I actually started taking myself seriously with writing. I think it was something I played at when I was a kid. I got married. I had 3 children. I then got divorced. So life took all of its lovely turns as it does. And I think after my divorce, I kind of thought, hang on a minute, do you remember that dream you had once upon a time? Mm. Isn't it time to have a look at that again? And that was when I started to pick up my pen and write again. And it was like the floodgates opened. Everything kind of poured out of me. And I write fiction and I write nonfiction. So the Gemini in me, my two heads.
That's really interesting because I'm a Gemini and I write both. That's really interesting. I've never thought about it like that. Thanks, Shelley. I'm going to take that. I'm going to be like, this is why I do it, just because I'm a Gemini. But I know your background is in holistic health and that you I know that that plays a really important part in the work you do to support authors. And we'll come on to that because I'd love to know your thoughts on the kind of the mindset that people have to be a writer. But I know your first nonfiction book has sold really well. I'm just going to have to read off my notes here, but it says 20,000 copies, which is wow. That is not to be sniffed at in the slightest, is it? Crikey.
Absolutely. It did. That snuck up. I did an interview for, I think it was the Writers Forum many years ago. And the lovely, lovely journalist, when we were chatting, he says, how many copies have you sold? And I was like, I don't know. How do I know that? How do I find that data? And he told me, so this is how you sort of go and find your bits. This was many years ago. And so I found it. And I remember sending him the message going, oh, my goodness, I've sold, so many. And he was the one that said, you do know that most traditional publishers sell like 5,000 in their lifetime. And I was like, what? And it was, yeah, I think it was that moment where I went, oh, I might be okay at this.
Yeah, just a bit, Shelley. Just a bit. Blimey. No, you're right. And I was reading something the other day around the statistics to do with, I think it was an article about how can you sell 1 million books and should you even try to, or something. That was the sort of the kind of the idea around this article. And it was I think it was a guy who'd done some help support for people like Tim Ferriss and stuff like that. And it was really interesting because he was saying that I think it was like people that I think that every year the number of books that sell 1 million copies is something like 20 out of the 500,000 or whatever plus that are published. 20. And I think we often have this misconception, don't we, that everybody, if you don't sell 1 million copies, then you can't really say that you're in any way successful. And actually the truth is, like you absolutely just said, the majority of people, like majority of traditionally published authors, don't earn out their advances, so they all that sort of thing. And that it was something like you said, like it's most traditionally published authors would love to sell 5,000 copies. A lot of self-published authors would also love to sell 5,000 copies.
But there's more to it than money as well, isn't there? I think that was what shocked me when he kind of said how many copies, and I was like, I hadn't even thought to look because it was what it gave me outside of the monetary advance that I got.
I'd love to know sort of what do you think you did that helped towards that in terms of getting people interested in your book and getting those sales, because obviously it's not about the number per se, but obviously with that level of success, I'd love to know, I'm sure the listeners would love to know, what things were you doing, do you think, that helped towards selling that many?
I think the one thing that I was doing that I still do now and that I'm big on is engagement and communicating. So I actually enjoy social media. I like being out there, but then every now and then I do get a bit of a burnout and I'll disappear into my little black hole. But there is a massive value to having that author platform and being able to be visible. And Twitter was my go-to back in the day. I started that, I think it was back 2013 when I jumped onto Twitter. And I started to engage with a lot of the book bloggers and the other writing community. I made so many amazing friends. And it was through that that my book, me just posting about it, this is what I've done, this is what it's all about. And it was a book blogger, Rosie Amber, who picked it up. And I'd engaged with her a few times and had lots of chats, but she picked it up, she read it, she reviewed it. Fortunately, she loved it. She's one of the top Amazon reviewers. So it just exploded. It absolutely exploded. So I will put hand on heart, it's all down to her, just kind of throwing it up on her platform. And then it kind of went from there, really, as people started to read her blog posts and her reviews, a lot more people started to pick it up. I mean, this was self-published. So my publishers, they re-released it again, but I self-published it in 2014. And I'm still, to this day, getting messages from people telling me what that book has done for them. And just honestly, I've been in tears so many times over the amazing messages people send me. But yeah, it was just putting myself out there, visibility, chatting, engaging, sharing the love of what I do and other people's books as well. I think you'll know this as an author yourself. It's not a competition at all. It's all about collaboration, all of it. And that's the bit I love about being an author and having a relationship with book bloggers as well.
Yeah, I think you're right around the community thing. I think that I always like to say that, and I think actually I said that in Dare to Write, you know, it's got to be about, it's not your competition, it's other people in the community. Because, you know, when you go into a bookshop, you're never going to be the only person who's ever written anything on a particular subject. There's always going to be all of these people who've got certain takes on things, particularly in nonfiction. You know, I'm a massive Habits fan, so I consume all the Habits books. And essentially, I know that fundamentally, that Habits are formed in the same, whoever says it, they're still formed in the same way in my brain. But it's maybe, you know, I always get something new from something, or I just love maybe the style the author's talking it to me, you know, in, that makes it more relatable or makes me remember it in a different way. And I think that's what we have to remember as authors, is actually the likelihood of you know, us writing the exact same book as someone else in the exact same way is just, it's just impossible. So embrace the community for sure. But that's really interesting that you know, found people, because obviously, you know, that's coming up to what, nearly 10 years ago. And do you know, I mean, I don't know much about book bloggers anymore. Are they still a thing as much as they were, or is it something that's a bit,
yeah, huge? Still? The downside is, if there is a downside, but they predominantly do fiction. So it's very hard to find the nonfiction readers that will have that kind of an impact. We have shenanigans, as we call them, where we all meet up in actual in person. I've been up to Matlock and met a few of them. So it's lovely to actually be part of their community because they all work so hard and for nothing. You know, this is something that they just love to do. But yeah, it is a downside that we don't have enough nonfiction bloggers out there, really.
Talk a bit, I know obviously this is for business owners, this podcast, but I'd be interested to know, I know you said you know that you got a book deal in 2017, is that right? A 10 book deal. Was that, I mean, that's incredible in itself. Again, I say it like it's just like run-of-the-mill normal, which of course I know very well, knowing the publishing industry, that it's not run-of-the-mill normal. But is that for fiction, is that for non-fiction, or a mixture of both, or what's the deal with that?
Yeah, it was for five books. The deal was five books for each genre. Yeah.
And how is it in terms of doing that approach? Because I was listening to, which I'm sure you must have listened to in the past, the Creative Pen podcast with Joanna Penn. And she was talking to Rachel Herron on an episode that I was listening to the other day. And Rachel Herron is, I think she is either fiction. I know she's definitely fiction. I can't remember whether she publishes nonfiction as well. But she has a hybrid model to her publishing where some of her series are published by a publishing house, other series she self-publishes. I mean, do you do something similar, or are you now just under your publisher?
I do something similar, actually. That was one of the things that BHC Press said to me when I signed the contract, that they were happy for me to have publishing deals with other publishers and also to self-publish as well, which was brilliant. So yeah, I've done a couple of self-published titles, just ones that I wanted to get out there. But working with them, it's just brilliant. It's a joy, it really is. So while we're working together, that's fine. And I think it was a meditation book and also a planner that I did that I self-published only recently. But yeah, it's quite nice doing the hybrid, I must say.
Yeah. And I think people sometimes think that they have to only do one, or that, you know, that if once they decide that they want to go down the traditional route, they shouldn't self-publish and vice versa. And actually, it's really refreshing to hear, you know, different people now talking about the fact. And when I was at the self-publishing show, there was someone on stage on one of the panels, and he was saying the same thing. He was like, yeah, some of them I have a publishing deal with for this series that I self-publish. And I came away from it thinking, that's really interesting, because for me, you know, I've always thought, well, I've always had the idea that if I publish for children, I'd love it to be through traditional publishing. If I publish, you know, for adult fiction, I'm more than happy to be self-published. And I think it's always, as I say to people, I'm sure you do too, it's a personal preference, isn't it, about the route that you go down. Do you feel like you have a good sort of creative control still, that you feel like it's a team collaborative approach?
100%. Yeah, 100%. In fact, I've just been emailing backwards and forwards with my publisher about the book blurb for a book that's coming out, and they were just like, a few tweaks here, what do you think about? And they're always asking for my input. Does this, you know, represent what you wanted to say? So yeah, definitely 100% team effort. Just talking about the self-publishing as well. I obviously self-published How I Changed My Life in a Year, but I was contacted by Penguin Random House after they saw it online and got to go and meet them. So even though you're self-published, you don't know who's watching you. And I think that sometimes, if people think, oh, I won't self-publish because I want to do the traditional route, sometimes it can be good to be actually out there and doing it.
Mm. And I think there are stories, aren't there, of people who self-published and then got picked up. I know LJ Ross was somebody that I sort of know of, but also in the children's world, Maz Evans, I know she did Who Let the Gods Out, which was self-published, and then Chicken House picked it up. So I think it's not something that you have to have a definitive route planned out, because, you know, like I always say, that the way how you think things are going to pan out very rarely pan out in the way you assume and plan for them. And I'm sure you would agree, in terms of particularly with publishing, you know, it's almost like just get your work out there, you know, just be confident in what you're writing and you want to put out there. And actually how it comes about is how it comes about. And I think, you know, you can control, obviously, you know, various factors to it, but like you just very, you know, very well said there, around you don't know who's watching, you don't know who's going to mention it to somebody who'd be like, I read this really good book, and you don't know who they work for, or who knows who in this very small world we often live in, and you end up finding yourself, you know, with people interested in it that maybe, you know, weren't on your radar even, as so often can be the case. I'd love to know, because you obviously, being such a, you know, the 20 books you've got under your belt, and, you know, I'm always looking to learn myself, is there a process, or what's your writing process like when it comes to getting the book written? Is there sort of a way you do each book in terms of how you approach it, in terms of your mindset, I guess?
I think when I had... when I was working to my schedule with BHC, it was alternated. So I do fiction, then non-fiction, fiction, then non-fiction, which is great if you are, as you say, in the headspace. I know when I wrote How I Motivated Myself to Succeed, I was going through quite a dark period then, and I got 30,000 words in and said to my editor, I'm throwing this in the bin. And I remember saying, you know, you're really brave. I cried. She was like, no, it's fine. But it was, you can't write about motivation if you're not feeling it. And I did. I threw the whole manuscript that I'd written so far in the bin, and I started to write fiction. So for me, it was just switching it out and doing something different, totally different. Writing about werewolves running through a forest is quite easy if you're depressed. You know, you can kind of throw everything, all that angst, into the scene, the whatever it is that you're feeling. But the nonfiction side, it does need you to be on it. So sometimes I have to sit my bum in the chair and really work through it if I've got a deadline for a specific genre. But other times, if I'm free to write what I'll write, I'm a bit like, you get mood dressers, don't you? I can't wear that today because I'm not feeling it. It's a very similar kind of thing. If I'm not feeling it, then I can't write it. And I'm lucky that I have that opposite genre to dip into when I need to.
That's very interesting, actually. I think I try to say to people, you know, I'm always a big advocate of trying to have some sort of, for nonfiction, a chapter outline, something that you work from. And I think that that can help when you sit down to maybe write a chapter on a particular topic that you're just not feeling. If you've got an outline in place, you can be like, you know, I'm not feeling that particular chapter today or that section today. What else am I feeling more inclined to write? Because, you know, lots of authors I work with often say to me, oh, it's... you know, it brings up stuff, writing, you know, particularly when it comes to sharing their personal stories, it brings up a lot of emotion, or it's all, you know, writing is therapy, you know, that's why people use that as a tool. But it's, I think people underestimate how much it can bring up for you, be it about your skill set around being a writer, be it around, you know, the experiences that you've had growing up that maybe you're having to refer back to and you're bringing it up again. And it can be a painful experience. It can be emotional. And I think it's, people shouldn't underestimate that when it comes to the process.
Not at all. They need to, it runs hand in hand with self-care. You need to make sure you've got strategies in place to support yourself when you are writing something that's quite deep. I know it's fiction, but the duology that I've just written is vampires, but the darkness that surrounds the vampires is depression. And that's how I helped myself, by writing it out in a fictional way. So even if you're working on a non-fiction, you could switch just to get yourself through something and write a flash fiction and put it into a fictional setting. And I think that can help sometimes when you're not feeling it.
You're right. And it's one of those things where I think when you're writing, I often talk to people, and myself included, you know, that things crop up in the writing that you maybe didn't think would when you first started out. And particularly in fiction, you know, you find all of a sudden, I always find like a character just pops in that I wasn't anticipating even featuring. It's like, who's this person that's just all of a sudden like just come about, and I wasn't expecting them to appear and to behave in the way they behave. But I think in terms of nonfiction, it can also be, you know, sometimes you go in with a structure, you go in with an idea, and then actually halfway through you're like, do you know what, this isn't working the way I thought it was going to work. And it's about having the kindness, the self-kindness, to be like, do you know what, maybe I didn't actually quite get that right this time, let me stop and really have a think about where this needs to go, or how I need to change things around, and not beating ourselves up about the fact that we didn't plan it right the first time. But yeah, it's interesting. And so I know, like I say, your background's in holistic health, and I'd love to know, like, how does that help with the authors that you support, do you think?
We've talked about, like, the motivation, the mindset are huge, aren't they? Confidence is another one. Perfectionism. Oh my goodness. The amount of my clients who they want to, and I get it, that you want to get it right first time. You're never going to. And like we were just saying, you know, just even the planning can sometimes go not quite how you wanted it to. So it's having that confidence to play. Just play with your first draft. Just get it out of your head and onto the page. And I think so many of us try and get it right that first time, and you can't. I can never remember who referenced it first, but I use it all the time about shoveling sand. Just shovel sand into a sandpit. And then later, when you get to the editing stages, that's when you make your sandcastle. I think that's just a fabulous way of looking at it. Just get those words on the page and worry about the rest of it and how it all fits together later, as long as it's out of your brain. But yeah, motivating people, writing prompts, absolutely one of my favorite things in the world, writing prompts. And I guess I use a lot of journaling type prompts, which obviously can bring up all sorts of personal stuff. But they're a really, really good way of just checking in with yourself and getting some words down on the page as well to help.
I think it's such a creative process, isn't it? So it brings out all our not our insecurities necessarily, but it brings out, you know, sort of these emotions about our ability, our skill set. I think in nonfiction, it's sort of like, will anyone find this helpful? Is my message enough? Am I enough? What are people going to think? What are my peers in my niche going to think of me for writing a book? And I do think that it often, and I'm
You may disagree with me, I don't know, but I feel that often women, we're harder on ourselves when it comes to that. Then, you know, I support men through the writing journey, and they seem to be more, I'm going to write a book, this is what it's going to be about. Just tell me what I need to do, like in terms of, you know, let's get the structure together. And then they just go off and write it, and they come and they're just a bit like that about it. And you know, I wonder whether, because, you know, I guess we feel so many more emotions, I guess, for a lot of women, it's like that. We get that emotional attachment maybe to the project. We don't see it as this this sort of clinical thing that is like, I just need to write this and this many words and then it's done. I think we put so much of ourselves exactly. into it.
Yes,
and then
we're
like, but if people don't like it, that means they don't like us. And it's, but of course it isn't. And I think that we have to, you know, all that Brené Brown stuff around vulnerability and, you know, just accepting the fact that some people will think what you do is terrible or your writing is terrible or they won't like it. And I think you have to go into the process accepting that and being okay with that. It's not to say it won't hurt when people leave, you know, negative reviews. It's, of course it does, but it's also just thinking to yourself, okay, well, you know, more often than not, were they my ideal reader in the first place? Probably not. And even if they were, they're entitled to their opinion. You know, I went to see the new Poirot film on Friday, and I went to see it with my friend who affectionately calls herself a Poirot purist. So basically what that means is that no one else other than David Suchet is allowed to be Poirot in her mind. Whereas I went to it and I know Poirot, but I'm not someone who loves the character as much as she does. And it just goes to show that our two experiences of the same film, I was like, yeah, I quite enjoyed that. And she was like, well, Poirot would not run, you know, all this sort of thing. And she was looking at it from a different lens. And because poor Kenneth Branagh wasn't David Suchet, how dare he even try? But it was just this whole thing around both of us were experiencing the same film and we both came away with different opinions of it and different views on it. And I think as an author, you have to remember that you're going to have readers who do that, who go into reading your work and will come away with it and will recommend it to everyone they know. Or they'll have a conversation, be like, oh, I read this, and that person will be like, oh, I just didn't enjoy it. And the other person will be like, what do you mean you didn't enjoy it? I loved it. And of course, that's just the nature of being creative. And
I was just going to say, the best piece of advice I ever got was from a lovely author who, it was one of the first times I'd got a review on my first ever book, and she'd spotted it, and it wasn't a glowing 5-star review. And she messaged me straight away, and she said, right, I want you to go over to Amazon, I want you to find your favourite author, and I want you to look at one of their books. And I want you to see how many reviews they've got. And I did, and I went over, and I think I looked at Stephen King actually, and it was like the mix, loads of 5-stars obviously, but quite a few ones, quite a few twos, quite a few threes. And that was the best piece of advice anyone had ever given me, because it started my hardening of the skin. I think that's the best way of putting it. So exactly as you've just said, you're not going to please everyone. People are going to just not connect with what you're saying. That's okay. And I think that was the biggest learning bit for me. Oh, right, okay, so they didn't like it. That's fine. Now let's look at all the other people who did like it. They're my target audience. They're my people.
We look at the 5-star reviews, obviously we do, because, you know, but I don't know about you, but if I've ever had a 1-star, I always look at 1-star reviews, not necessarily for me. I've had one 1-star review that, you know, I was a bit like crushed, and then I had to do that whole piece of work around, remember, it's just someone's opinion and it's fine. But I think it's interesting to, I always try and say to people, look, people who write 1-star reviews, they're just generally, I think it was Stephen Bartlett who was talking about this, or someone who was talking about this recently around 1-star reviews. It was like, they're just people who just don't like life in general. So like, don't read 1-stars, because it's not an accurate portrayal of what they are reviewing. They're more people who've just got, you know, a beef about something, and they, you know, they've got other shit going on in their lives. And probably with like the 5-star review as well, it's more like people who are sort of your super fans, where you really want to look at those 3- and 4-star reviews, where you're getting your best sort of response and feedback. And
you get the feedback then, don't you? The proper feedback.
Yeah. And also, I guess when you're doing market research as an author, you know, I always try and say to people when they come to work with me, you know, you know, you need to look who else is on the shelf next to you in that metaphorical bookshop of Amazon, or even in the literal bookshop, who is there, and look at those 3 and 4 star reviews, because that's where the gold is. That's where people are like, I really wanted it to be this and it wasn't. And you can be like, oh, okay, that's interesting. You know, readers that are similar are going to be looking actually for this, and I need to make sure I try and incorporate, you know, something that that touches on that, if that's maybe not what they got through that particular book. So in terms of the work you do with authors, you and I, we were saying before we came on, we're very similar in terms of you know, an aspect of, we're both mentors and coaches, and we support people to write. Do you want to talk a bit more about what you do in that field?
Yeah, sure. So my bit, I think I've niched as far down as I can get, because my favourite part of the entire process for myself as well as my clients is the getting going, is getting that I've got an idea for a book, now what, that just I could spend all day every day just picking people's brains apart. So that's where I niche. I get inside their head and dig that out and get them into that outline and that plot, so that they know what they do, what they want to do, and how they're going to do it. I'm not an editor. I'm not a proofreader. I'm not a publisher. I've got amazing contacts I can send people to, and that's where that collaboration comes in. I've also got amazing relationships with other book coaches and mentors, because it's such a massive project, writing a book, isn't it? You have to have a right fit. You have to have that. A bit like therapists, you have to connect with who you're working with. So, and that goes for us working with clients as well as them working with us, doesn't it? So, yeah, I think it's really good to have a community of people who do lots of different things in different ways, so that we can all kind of work together. But yeah, my favorite part is getting them going. And then I just act a bit like an accountability buddy as they write. So I've got size 8 feet for a reason. I bum kick everybody.
I think it's necessary though, isn't it, with when it comes to that. I think that's what a lot of people come to me for, once they've had, like, you know, an initial session to map it out and plan out their book. It's the accountability, because I think people know that when they've got to get, you know, then they've got a session coming up where we're going to look at what they've been doing, you know that for the majority of people, it's like, oh my gosh, let me get my ass in the chair. You know, as somebody who's written so many books, what are those habits that you find, you know, help you get your bum in the chair when you know, because it is what we do for a living, it's either we'll often feel like we don't want to, or we'd rather do anything else. What works for you when it comes to, like, what's the habits that you kind of fall back on to make sure you do get your bum in the chair and you do start writing?
I think the main thing for me is getting out, actually leaving my desk. Because I work from home, sometimes I can sit at the same desk and write my book, not a problem. Other times I need a different environment. So I'll go, and I think, you know, I've got a camper van called Snoopy. So I can jump in here and take my laptop and just head off anywhere and do some writing or some researching. A coffee shop. I need that white noise sometimes. Just to sort of mix it up and just feel like there's people around you, because it's quite an isolated job, isn't it, writing a book. So getting out and just changing the position where I am and what I'm doing and where I am. I find that's probably the biggest thing that helps me more than anything. And I know that's not necessary, but a lot of my clients, they can't do that. They can't go out. They have to have that time at home. But I know working with deadlines is a motivator in itself, because when you've got, right, I've got a week and I've got to submit it, it doesn't matter what you try and talk yourself out of, you have to force yourself to stick your bum in the chair and actually do the writing.
Deadlines are definitely the way. Deadlines just work for me, for myself, because otherwise, when you haven't got an editor who's breathing down your neck, and you're having to, particularly in the first draft stage, where, you know, maybe you haven't got an editor sort of ready. And, you know, I always say to people, start your first draft, and while you're writing it, get in touch with an editor, get yourself booked in, because, you know, it's so important to give them enough time in their diary to be able to fit you in when you finish. Because I think sometimes that's the mistake people make, is they finish their first draft and they're like, I'd like it edited immediately, please. So I think it's, but so without that, especially in those initial stages, the deadline thing for me, just to say, right, by the end of this week, or by, you know, for me, I tend to do daily ones. I'm like, I know I want to write 1,000 words in the day, and I break that down into two sprints. So I'll do 500 in the morning, 500 maybe after lunch, because then for me, I think, I've just got to write 500 words. That's what I'm doing. And then it's not that whole, I've got to write an entire chapter or whatever. So I think that that's definitely, for me, the only way that I can get it done is to set myself deadlines rather than just leaving it open-ended. Because, you know, I'm sure we both know that, particularly in self-publishing, if you leave it open-ended, the chances of you actually publishing it are so slim, aren't they? Because you're like, oh, no, oh, okay, I would like to do it next year, or I'd like to do it in 6 months' time. And then that lapses and you're like, oh, never mind, you know, I'll do it, or maybe I'll do it next year. And actually to be able to say, right, I'm publishing, I always say to people, tell people I'm publishing on this day. And if it, I mean, no one's going to remember everything you've ever said. So even if it's like a week out, it doesn't matter. But at least hold, get some accountability from somewhere. If you're not able to work with people like us, it's around, you know, set yourself some deadlines, give yourself some accountability through a friend, or, you know, even your followers on social media, whatever works for you, because then that will help you get your bum in the chair for sure.
Yeah, I try and get my ladies to put it out there on their social media and just say, tell your audience that you're writing a book. And they do take some nudging sometimes. And I get that, because it's that whole visibility, that vulnerability bit. But every time they've done it, the response has been amazing. And it's almost spurred them on to, right, now I can sit my bum in the chair because I know people are behind me 100%. And that's a nice feeling for them, definitely.
I think it's about having people in, you know, I think we both sort of referenced the importance of having a book team of people that so the professionals that are going to help you, of course, but also those people that, you know, I always like to say, you need to have a variety of people. You need to have people who are going to just listen to you and feel sorry for you, because sometimes you just need that. You just need someone to be like, oh, yeah, that sounds shit. Yes, it was. And then you need the people who are going to be like, come on, you got to keep going. That, you know, you need that person. And then you basically also need that person who's just like, don't give me that shit, I'm not listening to you. Just get, you know. So it's almost like you need to have those people that, you know, when you're feeling a certain way, if you feel like you just need someone to go, it's okay, have some chocolate, you know, just don't, you know, then you can go to that person. Or if you know you need someone to be like, get your bum in the chair, please, you know, do it, then you can go to that person. And I think that we underestimate the importance. Sometimes we see it so as a solo project, as an individual thing, which of course, ultimately, you know, when we get right down to the nitty gritty, it is you and the laptop. But, you know, that support network is so, so important. It is powerful. And don't, you know, I think people, the majority of people, if you choose wisely, they want the best for you. They want you to succeed in what you're trying to do. And, you know, if they don't, then they're not allowed to be part of that very special team of people. Yeah. And then I guess, because this is a podcast for people who are writing for their business, what have you found the opportunities that have come off the back of, you know, writing your nonfiction? What's happened for your business that hopefully can inspire some people to get cracking with their books?
When I was writing my nonfiction, I was still running my holistic spa back then. So for me then, it was like promoting that actual side of the business. And because it was a lot of it was one-to-one, it was actually, it got me to create workshops and bigger events. So those opportunities came. I don't know if you know this, that was bitten by a spider and my body started breaking down and it was all horrible. And I had to close my holistic business, which is how my writing kind of came. You know, all of a sudden it was my full-time job. But going out and networking as an author and saying, this is the book that I've written, that was when people started to say to me, how did you do that? How did you start? I've always wanted to write a book. And it was my lovely, lovely coach, Karen, who said, you know, you can charge for these services. And I was like, what? Who's going to want to know from me? And she's like, you've written a few books, Shelley. People are interested. And I was like, okay. And it was literally a light bulb moment. I was out networking as an author. And then the mentoring kind of came about. But the opportunities that has given me now is joining people on podcasts. You know, this opportunity is just amazing for your visibility. I get to be a judge at all kinds of awards now. I get to speak at all kinds of events. I'm over in Kidderminster tomorrow talking about ChatGPT of all things, just because of the writing angle of it for authors. So anything I talk about and anything I do around writing now has opened up all these opportunities, as well as doing talks on motivation and that side of the self-help side of it, which is what a lot of my nonfiction was about. So it's kind of opened two doors, really, the writing and a writer, and then the self-help side as well. So yeah, it's been amazing. It really has.
Oh, yeah, I find that's exactly how I started, was with people asking me, how have you done that? How did you write a book? I've always wanted to write a book. It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's one of those things that's so niche in a way, teaching people how to write books. But there are so many business owners who want to know and want to elevate their brands through books. And I think if you can give them any kind of direction, because that's it, isn't it? People come to you and they're like, I want to do it, but they're just like, I just don't know where to begin. Like, how do I even start? Like, what do I do first?
And why would they? We were probably the same all the way back then. It was like, well, we just sat and started writing and bunged together in any which way we could, and now we know. It's if you don't know, you don't know, do you?
That's good to know. And I think that I always try and say that to people. Often they'll say, you know, why should I write a book? Like, what does writing a book do? And like you said, it's the book itself is such a tiny piece of a much larger puzzle, isn't it, around, you know, the opportunities that come off the back of it and the work that comes off the back of it, like you say, in different aspects of whatever the book's about, but also just the writing process and that. And, you know, for me, it tends to be around, you know, the structure of things and story, and that's something which I really love talking about, because I think it's really important part of nonfiction. So it's so interesting, isn't it, that what comes off the back of this.
It is. It's fascinating. Yeah. Absolutely fascinating. Yeah.
Well, thank you for today. I have absolutely loved, and I am just in awe of your 20 books. Before we finish, I've just got one last question that I ask everybody, which is, if you had one piece of advice for an aspiring author, what do you think that advice would be?
I think I'm probably going to go into the mindset motivation side of it, but action doesn't require motivation. Motivation requires action. So just sit your bum in the chair and do it and write your book. I think that's the best piece of advice I can give.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I think there's some science behind that, isn't it? The motivation comes, I can't remember who I was reading about that, but is it the motivation comes after the action, is it doesn't actually instigate it. And afterwards, you know, I was thinking, that's so true, because actually whenever I log my workout for the day, I'm always like, that's the thing that I'm like, then feel motivated to sit down again the following day. I don't necessarily feel motivated to sit down, you know, just before the session, but afterwards is when you get that hit of, you know, adrenaline and excitement. Where can people find you, Shelley?
I'm everywhere. I literally am. I'm like a plague. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm all over. I've even joined TikTok, can you believe? But not quite to anyone else's standard. This is what my daughter's helping me with for my young adult books. But yeah, I've got a link tree that I can send over, and it's got every single platform known to man on there.
Perfect. I'll put that in the show notes. But as I say, it's been an absolute joy. And thank you for giving up your time and to share your knowledge and your incredible journey with the listeners, because it's really amazing. And I always follow and admire everything you're doing. So thank you for giving me inspiration as well.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Shelley as much as I loved having it. We're so similar, she and I, in our approach to writing and also in our approach to supporting others to write. I'm completely inspired by her and how she continues to drive her writing career forward. I bet you are too. I just want to express my thanks again to Shelley for her time and for the valuable advice she shared with me in this episode. If you want to connect with her, you can find the links to her social media and her books in the show notes. If you know another writer who'd enjoy these episodes, do share it with them too. You can give me a little shout out on social media if you've been listening using the hashtag CreatingHappyWriters. If you'd like to connect, you can find me at stephcaswell.com and on Instagram at stephcaswellauthor. I'm also on LinkedIn, so you can come and find me there too. Until next time though, happy writing.